Crouch. Bind. Set.
Joe presents The House of Rugby, Season 3.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new series of House of Rugby brought to you by Joe. It's Season 3, and everybody knows that the third season is very often the best, whether it be The Sopranos or Ozark. You kind of get the drift, don't you? So obviously, there's been a changing of the guard, and for the next few weeks, I am very loosely in charge of this bunch of players. I'm opting for squad rotation, and inevitably they're going to turn against me. So I'll probably be there till about January when I'm sacked embarrassingly and have to leave this job for good. However, I have a decent team to pick from. So let me just run you through them. I have Sean O'Brien. I have Adam Jones, John Fox Davis, Alex Good and Jamie George. So like any first game of the season, there is a temptation to just try everyone out, see who's put in the hard work. I do not subscribe to Eddie Jones glamorising these finishers, so nobody wants to be on the bench. I have picked two starters today, and they are Sean O'Brien and Adam Jones. Welcome, guys.
Hi, Lee. How are you?
Hello. Hello, Lee.
The enthusiasm is overwhelming. I'm looking forward to this. last week, you know, when we spoke and I asked you that I knew you two would know each other, you just sort of casually said, yeah, we shared a bed. That was it. But what's the story?
Well, the story behind it is I wanted Bond to share the bed with me, but he wouldn't... He wouldn't join me.
Well, it's fair enough, isn't it?
I still think it needs a bit of explanation.
Probably had something to do with I had no clothes on at the time when we were rooming together. Yeah. But other than that, we were fine.
No, we had a great time. Well, I shared with a few Irish boys and they all had their weird habits. So I thought, well, he was walking around naked. I didn't want to get to know his habit too much. So, yeah.
Oh, glad we cleared that up. I wonder why on earth, probably because you're the only two people I've ever met that haven't got a podcast, but why are you getting involved in House of Rugby? What's the thinking behind it?
Well, it's going to be good crack, isn't it? That's what we're here to do, or to try and do anyway. And I kind of enjoy these really relaxed chats as well and shoot the breeze and talk about everything and anything, really.
Yeah, Sam, I think me and Sean are probably... We try to bring a bit of light relief to it. I think, you know, we'll get very straight answers from John Fox. You know, he won't deviate much from what his coaches tell him. And obviously, Alex Good's in Japan. And Jamie George can't do it. So, we'll
bring the crackers. That's not why you were selected. I mean, you basically just ruled everyone out, which is the only reason you're here.
Foxy would be too. He absolutely loves this stuff now. He loves like looking at himself in the camera and he has his hair done perfectly.
He's got great hair.
Very good hair. Tan is spectacular as well. No one knows that about him, but it's perfect. I like most Welsh boys, bar Adam. But he's...
Well, the fact you named him John Foxy Davis, he's already branched out to just the nickname type of guy, like Alfie and, you know, these type of people. More than just rugby players.
Right, we're going to get them on in the next few weeks. I was at Twickenham at the weekend, but I was keeping an eye on you both to see what you were up to and how you got on. Sean, your first 80 minutes for what, a couple of years?
Thanks very much. Yeah, it was actually first 80 minutes in, I think, over 2 years. So the body is still stiff and sore and... waking up Sunday morning wasn't too nice, but glad to get the shift in. We didn't get the result we wanted. Made a few stupid errors and stuff, but we're prepping well this week and looking forward to what lies ahead. But on a personal level, now I'm delighted to get back playing and get 80 minutes under the belt.
I didn't realise he played for London Irish. I just thought he was there some sort of ambassador role. I hadn't seen it. I genuinely didn't. We watched games of London Irish last year and I was looking for him. I didn't see him once. I just thought he'd be like wandering around London, embracing the London Irish lifestyle. I'm glad you're playing though.
Yeah, no, I'm back this season. That was in last good year's boy. Contract bomb, so I'm back. You'll see me soon enough.
I have no doubt.
If it was painful for Sean, Adam, it must have been a little bit painful for you on Friday night, Quins against Exeter.
Yeah, I was purely deflecting from that. So I was, Yeah. It didn't go overly well. But no, we were good. We went out for 65 minutes and, you know, they're good at everything, but they're very good at a couple of things. And yeah, we just held them out. And then once they got that sort of third try, it was just, you know, they just finished us off a bit. But no, they're the best team in Europe for a reason. Even when you play the sort of the A team, you know, they all play the same way. They all know their role and very well coached, right? You know, they've got some unbelievable players and yeah, they're going to be a tough team to beat this again this year, I think.
It's like a Saracens and Leinster thing, I think, when you look at the likes of Exeter. They've been developing this type of game for like such a long period of time. And as Baum says, like everyone knows their role inside out. And it's just like clockwork. And that's like, it's really nice to watch those teams playing. It's terrible to play against them because you know what's kind of coming and it's how to contain it.
It's exactly, it's just, yeah, exactly. It's like, anyway, you play the All Blacks, you know what's coming, but it's like going all about stop, try stopping us. And yeah. They're the same, you know, and they got some unreal players and they, you know, they bring in Cowan Dickey off the bench and, you know, who's probably one of the best hookers in the world at the moment. And it's just, you know, they're so deep and they're a tough team to play against.
I'm with that Twickenham at the weekend. What a weird atmosphere. 80,000 stadium empty. They'd hung some shirts on the stands, on the seats, which is, you know, great if you're one of the community clubs being represented. But honestly, for an international match, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, it was just such a strange one. I also did Wales-Scotland a couple of weeks ago, the last round of the Six Nations, and that was weird because it was at Inverness, and you were looking at two sides, most of whom who play in the Pro 14, and it felt honestly like you were at a Pro 14 match with anthems. But yeah, Twickenham, it was a strange one. And I think it was a bit of a strange match as well that, you know, England's defence was incredible and Sean Ireland just didn't really get into it, did they?
No, they didn't really. They fired a few shots in the second half, I thought, but, you know, it's very hard. It's like the Exeter whole thing we're after talking about. You know what's coming with England. You know they're coming with a big wall in front of you, and you know they're coming with a big, strong kicking game. And it's how you best manage it. I actually thought they managed the kicking game. Ireland managed it pretty well. With Hugo Keenan, I thought, for his first time in Twickenham and new to the international scene, done very well. There was only, he got cut out for Johnny Mays, but other than that, he was steady all day. But it's, they're in a different phase as well. Ireland are in kind of a new kind of plan, and to see can they play a bit more expansive rugby. And England have been doing the same thing now for a couple of years and are very, very hard stopped. But I was kind of surprised that they didn't pull away a little bit more. So I was glad the Irish boys really stuck it to them and stayed at it for the whole game. You know, you can talk about winning halves. Like, they did win the second half, in fairness. We'll take it anyway.
Yeah, I was with Rory Best and I just had to look up the stat, which I was hoping never, ever to say to him. Like, the last time that Ireland got nilled, and I think it was the All Blacks, it was like 60-odd points. And I was just begging. I didn't actually ever have to mention this to him. So when Stockdale went over, it was like, oh, thank God, you were playing in that one.
It was one of the grimmest days. It was in Dunedin, was it? Or no, it was in Christchurch. 2012, 60-0. Oh, I had to go for a beer after that, I can tell you.
Was that the one he sent off in it?
No, that was the year after, 2 years after maybe. We had a three test series and good old Nigel Owens gave them a scrum penalty when I think we were a point up and Carter went down, dropped a goal in the second test. So that was our chance of trying to beat him at that stage. But yeah, the 60-0 was a grim time for us as a group of players, I can tell you.
So should we talk about Wales since we... won our first game in seven games on Saturday. Massive win against Georgia.
I'm so happy about this, by the way.
Well, we won.
No, they're losing the other six.
Really? Why? We're Celts.
Hold on a minute now. You're after giving us a spanking over the last few years a few times. So your time has come to suck it up now.
Well, I think you mentioned you're in a transition phase, aren't you? So we're even further back down that phase. But look, I thought we weren't too bad. I thought we were pretty good. I liked Sheedy, what he was doing, Johnny Williams, all the young kids they brought in. The front row was brilliant. I thought Jake Ball was excellent. So, you know, there's a bit of, obviously it's going to be a different animal, England, isn't it? If it was a full Principality Stadium, if it was a bit, a bit more atmosphere, I think it would be a bit closer. You know, because, you know, England, they're probably the best side in the world at the moment, certainly looking at how the New Zealand are going at the moment. But England, we could beat them on our day, and, I'm sure Al will get them revved up, the eyeballs ready for Saturday.
After taking another Irishman, by the way, Callum Sheedy's Irish qualified, you know.
He's got a Welsh accent.
Well, played Irish under 20s, didn't he?
All right, well, you know.
So where is he from, Bob?
He's from Bridgend, isn't he? Or some of that.
Yeah, I think
so. Do you know Bridgend? Do you know where Bridgend is?
I know it, yeah. At the end of the earth, isn't it?
I'm not saying anything. Does someone's bin this tip then?
It's Sean's dog.
It is the dog here behind me. Sorry, that's
having its dinner or something.
No, I think Wales, you know, it's going to be a strange time for a bit, but, you know, we got the World Cup semi-final with the same group of players, won the Grand Slam with more or less the same group of players. You know, it's only a matter of time we become the best team in the Great British Isles again.
You become the best team in Wales again.
I can't say much because the captain will start ringing me and he'll start
What do you make of this Autumn Nations Cup? Because, you know, some people are saying it's something of nothing, and it's such a shame, isn't it, that Fiji aren't part of it, because I think a team like them would have made a massive difference. Everybody loves seeing them, and there's so much focus on getting a tier two side in. I feel that that's a real loss, Sean.
Yeah, I suppose, like, it would have been exciting to see them, but 29 cases of COVID, like, how did that happen, first and foremost? And then how were they allowed to get to France if they had some cases of COVID is my question. It's a bit mad and ridiculous to have that many cases in a 35-man squad. There's no real chance.
That's a big cava bowl to share.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so there's So, like, I don't know what the thinking behind it was. I suppose, are there rules and regulations within the squad of social distancing and adhering to guidelines before they left? But have that many, like, something obviously wasn't right. So, it's just disappointing they're not in the competition anymore. The Scots get another win.
Well, they've had to be in a bubble. You would have players from France, New Zealand, all over the place come in. Would they have all 2 weeks bubble and then go from there? Is that how it would have worked?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you saw quite a bit on different players' social media, whether it be like Nemanja Nadolo and things. I think they're all still out in France. What's interesting now is that Johnny May said it on Channel 4 at the weekend, like, that's England out of their bubble. They were allowed home for the weekend, and now the Scots, because they're not playing this Saturday, they've all gone home. But there still is that final round. So, you know, it's not going to be within 2 weeks now. So I don't know how the testing works in the build-up. You know, the bubble seems to have burst for everyone at this stage.
I think it's a strange way of doing it, because even in the clubs, as Bob will know, for us, we get tested every week, but we get tested on a Tuesday. So on Mondays, we're not allowed to do any contact or anything in close contact. But why not test on a Monday, for instance? Have the test results back by Tuesday and rock into the rest of the week. I suppose before the last lockdown, we were getting tested on a Tuesday, on a Monday and a Thursday, and then play at the weekend. So, you know, there's so much testing going on, but the way they're structuring the whole testing system is outrageous, and it's kind of contradictory in some places.
Yes, it's a strange one how it's happened for me. It's just, something's gone on, isn't it? Something's happened, and obviously the rules can't have been abided to, and which is a shame. But in this day and age, you have to abide by these rules, and, you know, it's important people do But then from a rugby point of view, you want to see Fiji play. You want to see them test themselves against these guys. And, you know, I know Scotland will be happy with the win and, you know, and probably get the semi-final now. But it's like, it's sad, really, because I think there was a genuine excitement that Fiji are going to be playing in this. You know, for whatever the competition is, you're going to have Fiji going up against the best teams, some of the best teams in the, certainly the Northern Hemisphere. And, you know, we don't get that chance now. And, you know, because they've made steady progress. I think Vern Carter was coaching, wasn't he? Jason Ryan, the Crusaders forwards coach. So they had a real good coaching staff, Glenn Jackson, these guys. So it was, it's a shame. It's a shame. It's a,
yeah,
it's
well, Vern Carter had the Barbarians and Fiji.
I don't know if we've got there, will we?
No, I'm just saying.
We won't go there.
He needs his rugby. Let's talk about COVID. And I was saying how weird it was, whether it be Champions Cup final or all these matches with no fans. This week, there has been the news that the government have announced that fans will be back in stadiums, potentially even better news though for the sport, that grassroots sport can return. So all this fear of losing potentially a generation hopefully will sort of be allayed and people will be back out on sports fields in the new year at the worst case scenario. Sean, what's it like from your experience playing in matches with no fans?
He hasn't played any games yet.
So. I knew that was coming, Bob. In my three experiences that I've played in the last while, yes, it's in fairness, it's very, very different. The first match I found extremely strange because while I don't like listening to my own voice, it's even more pronounced when there's no one in the stadium. And the other thing is the referees can definitely hear me now. So I don't get away with much for starters. So you have to behave yourself a little bit more. And it's just not the same though without fans. The atmosphere is not the same. The build-up's not the same. When you make a big hit or a good carry or there's a good phase of play, it's just completely different. So can't wait till the fans are back in. And, you know, as we've said earlier, the good news is hopefully that's not too long in the future for us.
And Quinns had fans, didn't they? There was a test event or something and you guys had some fans there.
Yeah, it was... Oh, look, to be honest, everyone was glad just to be playing rugby. But then we had about 3,000 in, I think, including staff. And it was brilliant, you know. It was so good for the boys. The fans loved it. And, you know, it was a lot of different... You had to order... going into beer, you know, it was kind of brought to you rather than going to the bar. And, you know, so everything was done, you know, really well. And our club's incredibly professional and sort of forward thinking around these type of things. But we had that sort of high of that game and then back to the, you know, no fans again. So it was, it's been tough. And, it, you know, for the players, it must be, you know, horrendous. It's not horrendous because you understand the situation that's going on, but, you know, rugby is so emotional and you feed off the fans so much. It must be so tough. But it's probably a testament of how professional the teams are in the league, that how competitive and the standard of these games are, that the fact there's no one in the crowd, but the players are still going, you know, balls out. And, you know, it's not like, I think, none of the games ever look like trial games or, you know, friendlies. Mm-hmm. It's always competitive, and which is, you know, massive pat on the back to the players, I think.
Just to clarify, when you say that people were getting beers brought to you, if you wanted a beer, people brought you a beer, it wasn't actually to you, the coaching staff. Are you talking about the fans?
No, there's been a few times I needed a beer in Friday night as one of them. But I'm sure there was apps and stuff, you know, and this type of thing. But
You boys, some of your coaching staff could do with a jumper as well. You boys, I see is all like wearing those vests, even on cold nights.
Well, there's Jerry Flannery, you know Fla. You know Fla loves a vest. Fla loves a vest. We got Bish, Britain's strongest man, and he's, you know.
Yeah, he's a monster altogether, isn't he?
Are you going to tell him not to wear a vest? Pull like a
guy. Yeah.
All right, mate, tell him next time.
No, I won't. When
you're not playing.
When do London Irish and Quinns play? This is going to be great.
It's not till after Christmas. That'll after Christmas, I think.
Sean, some players, when you spoke to them, like during lockdown and things, were welcoming the break that wasn't forced on them, saying that, you know, that might give them an extra year, 2 years rugby. And there was another group of people that were saying that their body's suddenly healed and they're not getting smashed up every single week. And they don't really know how much they actually want to go back into rugby. Can you sort of understand both sides?
You definitely can, I think. It's one of those things where the older crew like us, if you are playing lots of games, you embrace those breaks and you kind of enjoy kicking back and relaxing for a while. But the younger guys then, they want to develop and improve and try and get better. And I think a lot of guys, let's say in the Prem, young English guys and people who want to play international rugby, like it definitely hindered probably a few of their chances because they might have been in good form coming into that first period of lockdown, and then lockdown happens all of a sudden and you're kind of, it's hard to get back to that kind of form straight away when you kick back up. And, you know, I think now leading into the new season, you know, you talked with Sam Simmons earlier, we've had 3 weeks off. I think Exeter only had 1 week off, or sorry, 1 week of training leading into that game, and Bristol were just in a similar situation. So while we've had three or four, they've had 1 week and they still come out and produce kind of, you know, that standard of rugby. So that's a testament to all the players. But it's definitely welcome for some people who might be carrying knocks and niggles. But I think the younger crew and the real professionals want to be, you know, on it the whole time and keep driving on and getting better.
Adam, how did it affect like your younger players and your academy? Because when you speak to some of the sort of older guard, they're saying, thank goodness that we're at our end of the career. But if you're starting off, it's an uncertain time, isn't it?
Yeah, I think certainly around the playing and the fact, but a massive thing with the players I found and we found is, you know, it's you had sort of 5 months or 4 months of not having access to, you know, gyms and, you know, weights. You know, not everyone's got a gym. You know, some of our players are lucky, like we've got boys who want to, you know, keep the weight on. You know, it's easy enough to keep the weight off, isn't it? You know, go for a walk, go for a run, and don't eat, basically. So, but like, it's the other guys. So it's the academy guys coming through who need to get bigger to play at a professional level. They've had 6 months where they haven't been able to do it. But then I will say about our boys, regardless, they didn't have the weights. A lot of them came back in great condition. You know, certainly running fit. You know, but you know, it's all that, it's the contacts different. You didn't have that chance. You know, this was a lot of trying to get him up to speed quick, and but I will say the young fellas with us have been brilliant. You know, they've put, it was a lot of time, not so much to probably to educate themselves as well. You know, as you see a couple of our young second rows come in, and when one came back in, he'd spent a lot of time like watching rugby and learning what line or callers do, and so they've used it, a lot of them used it in a positive way, and which, you know, everyone had to, and this is, you know, certainly with coaches, we were doing, you know, Zoom calls, and we're trying to upskill ourselves. So when you do come back in, it's, you know, it's seamless, and you added a little bit more to your game than when you were first in.
I think you find out an awful lot as well about different personalities, and especially those younger guys like Adam was talking about. And it was the same for our younger guys. They came back in generally good nick after that long period. So they are being professional, they are minding themselves, they are eating well, they are trying to do everything they can do to come back in and hit the ground running. And then you're always going to have a few then that mightn't have done the amount of work you wanted to do. And, you know, that's up to them then to try and catch the pack again. And, you know, you have to apply yourself and you have to try and be better, especially the younger crew. But us older lads are experienced enough now. We know how to mind our bodies. So, we get away with a bit more.
Like I would have hated to have the sort of, as much as it been good for my body, I think having that sort of 4 or 5 months off, like I know in my head what would have happened there to myself, you know, and I see the boys, this is the kind of mindset, mindset change in everyone, you know, totally different sort of 10, 15 years ago when I was coming through, and then, you know, it's the professional all the time, you know. Like I was, a few of us who would have played, you a little bit like, you know, like a boxer in between fights. You play like test match level here, and then come down a bit, and then kind of go, you know, yo-yo a bit. But the guys now were so, you know, I know it's a job, and so everyone should be professional, but they're, you know, the way they come back in and great shape, and you know, the, even the boys who needed to keep the weight on and kept the weight on is it's a different breed, these lot.
Do you think, Bob, that, you know, that takes away from some of the characters that are going out of game nowadays? So you know the way you say, like, it's, you're here at test match level, you come back down to your province, you're having a bit of crack in between probably, but nowadays it's gone full circle, and younger guys nowadays, they don't have, I don't know, maybe they're afraid to have that bit of fun now, more so than we kind of did, like.
Yeah.
Are you more so than me, and me more so than the lads that are there now, probably?
I don't go off that. But I'm sure you've held your own, but no, I think, it has gone a bit. I think even when I guess when I was playing, it was, you had sort of the older boys like myself, Gethin, Mike Phillips, these type of age guys. And then you had the Lee Halfpennies, Warburtons, George and all. And it was like, it was literally like a million miles apart around. But then you really, like Sean will know now, these young kids coming through London Irish, they're so professional and they want his job. He's got to raise his game. So, and that's a good positive thing for the older players. You know, you can't sort of rest on your laurels. You've got to raise your game. You've got to be professional. If some opposite flanker who's, you know, trains all the time in London Irish, you know, wants to play, is physical, is 6'2" and a bit taller and a bit more mobile than him, he's going to want to, you know, he's going to take his place. So Sean, he's going to have to go to another, you know, the level he was when he was actually playing rugby.
I'll have to get bigger sprigs as well for the boots.
There's a stat in football that was discussed that now that there's no fans going into stadium, there have never been more goals scored than have been during this season. Do you see rugby being played in a different way? I know that a lot of people are being are quite critical of the what rugby's looked like in the autumn internationals. But from what you've seen, Adam, is it different at all?
Not really. No, I think it's the one thing you can hear is the noise and the bump and the, you know, the physical contact, where if it is fans, you can't really hear these things. But no, I think football's a little bit different, isn't it? It's not quite the same sport. I think, you know, it's a very, you know, if you're attacking the cop, you know, they can keep a goal out, you know, with just their noise and influence the referees, which I don't know if the referees is quite as easily influenced by the crowds in rugby. But look,
don't,
I think
even Sean's accent can influence a referee in the Prem.
Wouldn't have a clue what you're saying. So it's
yeah, exactly.
But I think it's like I'd say the standard of rugby, certainly in the end of last season, then, if you will, in the Prem, was Premiership was, you know, really good. Just weird without the people there, you know.
Great to see our guest has just turned up. I say guest, he's actually one of us as well, because he's going to be very much involved in House of Rugby. Alex Good, great to see you. What time of day is it?
It's 6 in the morning, so ohayo gozaimasu. Pronunciation's pretty poor, but working on my Japanese.
Tell us exactly where you are. Whereabouts in Japan?
So I'm in a little town called Tenedai, which is about 40 minutes outside of Tokyo, just north. It's not quite where my agent told me I'd be, but it's a sleepy little town. And you know, once I was dropped off and left to my own devices, it was quite a struggle in the first week.
How long have you been out there now?
It's been a month now. Okay. So I've managed to do 2 weeks training. Very much modified, as I saw how far the boys were running in the first week, so like 35 kilometers, and I thought, not sure my old bones will cope with that. So quickly sort of modified my running to, you know, tight calf, and I've been looking after myself since.
Is it true about the training out there?
Just what, the, like, it's just mad, how, or
like a lot of running, like long days, long, like 3-hour sessions, that type of stuff. Is that true?
I don't want to put anyone off, but yeah, very much so. I think I got home at 7:30 last night. It was back to the old days of training in the dark and coming home late. But it's a bit different at my club, because everyone's semi-professional except the foreigners. So they all have to work for the company. So they work in the middle of the day. So you'll start at the usual 8:30 or so. But then middle of the day, there'll be 3 or 4 hours off. They go to the office and work. And then you come back to training later. But certainly when you're on the field, they're long sessions, yeah. It's not the short, sharp, intense bits. It's longer and a lot of running.
Wouldn't fancy that now.
In terms of everything that was going on, Alex, so how, what was the decision for you to actually choose Japan for this year?
He had to get out, sure. He had to get out as quick as he could.
Pretty much it was...
There's a lot of reasons, I reckon.
Yeah, where'd you start? Start with COVID, probably, there being no other options, really. So take what you can get. So a semi-professional team in Japan, in the middle of nowhere. But to be fair, the Japanese have been lovely, very, very kind, and they're either laughing with me or at me, probably at me most of the time. It was a difficult situation at the club, and I thought I was never going to have a chance to go abroad again, potentially, because I was going to sign up for the long haul at Saris. So why not go for 1 year and just go somewhere completely different, really? And it's been an eye opener in Japan. I tell you, it was a tough first week, and then now that I can sort of navigate my way around the supermarket, I'm getting there.
Supermarkets are great, though. I go to Japan a few weeks every year. The supermarkets are like an experience in themselves.
It's the music. It's the most crazy music in the world. I don't even know if it's pop music or just howling. It's
like a horror film.
It's
like
loop.
Underneath you getting like a horror film.
Yeah. And I just walk around with sort of Google Translate just like on everything, like pushing everywhere. But yeah.
What other professionals are there with you?
Who you guys would know. There's a guy, Jack Lamb, Samoan, Jack Lamb, yeah. Number 7.
Oh, yeah. Is it Bristol?
Yeah, he was at Bristol. He's got
good knowledge
on him. Yeah, position hater. He knows all the sevens.
Yeah, exactly. He wouldn't have played against him and all that.
Yeah. Andrew Kellaway is a centre, and then there's a guy called Sam Jeffries, second row from Australia. But now we haven't got the all stars of some of the teams, but it's a good group, to be fair. Although the biggest difference. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Sean.
Is Cruiser near you? Is he? Is he anywhere near you?
He's about 2 hours on the driving. But he's in. When I arrived, everyone told me where he is the worst place in Japan. So literally, there you go.
I'm delighted for him.
I know that was music to my ears. When I was feeling a bit homesick, I just go, at least I'm not where George Crew is. Literally, I'm in with the agent and he goes driving me to where I am. And he's like, oh, your place is quite quiet. And I was like, oh, okay. What's George's place like? Yeah, not competitive or anything. And he's like, that's terrible. It's the worst place in Japan. It's honestly awful. Great program, like very professional, just terrible place to live. So I think every weekend I speak to him, he's on the train into Tokyo. It's made me a bit happier.
Do you have to learn the language at all or phrases for playing rugby out there? How does it work?
I guess probably slightly ignorantly, I thought the Japanese might speak a little bit better English because my Japanese is poor. And I was sort of informed that, you know, there's a lot of rugby talk, you know, like they call a line out, scrum a scrum. So perhaps I assumed everything would be the same. Salary cap.
Money's
money. It was quite different when I first got to training. I realized that actually this is going to be quite a struggle speaking with the Japanese guys, and to be fair, you know, I'm in their country, so I'm trying to my best to get on page with that and talk to them in between the sessions a bit, which is generally a game of charades, really, as I found out when the internet man came to the house, and obviously he spoke no English and I spoke no Japanese. So just one game of just hand gestures and hoping for the best, and, you know, putting stuff up on Google Translate and putting it in his face with the phone and him doing the same. And yeah, and him just saying, and me just doing, you know, arigato gozaimasu, just thank you. Just both of us repeating that about 100 times at each other. And just at the end, he just goes to me, he just said, Lampard, Gerard, hey. And I was like, great. He goes, Rooney, hey, Rooney. And I was just like, fantastic. I don't play football, but yep, I know who you're talking about. great, great players, yeah. And off we went.
Yeah, so, well, your internet's great. You've got the best picture of any of us, and you should send this guy around to Sean's because he's in a shocker.
He probably actually, that fella installing your internet must have thought that you boys were getting the same wages as the soccer players in Saris. That's what he probably meant.
Yeah, I don't know about that. You know, I've been shipped off to a semi-professional team in Japan, Sean. You know, I'm hanging on here. I've got to work for the company for NEC in the afternoons. You know,
hey, come and join London Irish. You're more than welcome.
Yeah. Well, you know, Shots I thought you were just taking up the whole wage.
No, I'm not the marquee. I'm not a marquee signing. So,
quick to just say that, are you?
When did your season start properly?
So they have about 100 pre-season games, but the actual first game is on the 16th of January.
Okay.
But we're playing a team this weekend who have had 6 pre-season games already, and obviously we don't start till the 16th of Jan. So yeah, they get their money's worth out of games out of you in that sense. But yeah, it's first game's actually against Cruzo. So yeah, he's got a very good team. So I said to him, whichever team wins buys dinner, which he didn't quite clock onto at first, and then agreed to it, and then went, oh, hang on a minute. Oh, right. And now he's a bit annoyed because his team's the best in the competition and mine isn't. So hopefully it'll be dinner on him, which would be nice. But yeah, I don't feel sorry for him. He's making a lot up in that wonderful town and spending nothing because he just sits indoors. But
he's miserable enough, Cruiser. I roomed with him on the Lions and never bought a coffee. Wouldn't order room service. Wasn't a very generous roommate, to be fair.
Oh, really?
No, I wouldn't. Nah.
Tell us what you really think, mate. Get it out of here. Come on. You sound quite bitter.
Well, we had a few words after a day or two. I was like, when you come back to the room, you always bring something for your roommate, and he wasn't buying into that. So I kind of ignored him for the rest of it then. Asked to be moved, actually.
He's the sort of guy who will think that you're trying to stitch him up. He'll be like, what do you mean you bring stuff back? No, it's the wind-up, right? It's a wind-up. He's still on edge.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
And then you'll realise once you're not his roommate, he'll be like, oh, he actually doesn't like me. Oh, that's and he'll take it to heart.
Let's keep in mind we've gone full circle because, Sean, you did actually, I mean, maybe Adam doesn't think that you were a great roommate since you asked him to share your bed. So maybe you're too generous.
I only asked him to lie beside me for a period of time.
Oh, that's okay.
Were you hungover? Did you want him to stroke the back of your head?
No. I can't. No. I need to be on my own when I'm hungover. It's.
Well, I don't want to know why you want to be in your own room. That's where the 4G's gone, Bert. That's where the 4G's gone.
Alex, so your overriding experience so far sounds a little uncertain about Japan.
No, I've really enjoyed it, to be fair. I think the moving 8,000 miles or whatever in the first week and not speaking the language that well and being in a small place where there isn't really any sort of English speakers at all and sort of being pointed at by the kids for being a gaijin, as they call it, which was quite surreal. I've really enjoyed it. The food's unbelievable. The people are very friendly, very helpful. And they want you just to have a great time, really. The one overriding, it's not emotion, but sort of thing I've learned, the difference has been the nakedness of the Japanese, though. I mean, honestly, I've never come across anything like it. The two guys in the lockers next to me, Kama and Yoko, I go in the morning and they are just stark naked. And I'm like, okay, cool, you know. And their idea of a towel to go to the showers, and bear in mind there are some females in the building, is just to walk around the building with what you'd call a chamois. It's like a handkerchief over their neck, completely naked. Just come out of the shower, dry their neck a little bit, you know, just dab their face down, walk around naked. They come next to me in the morning. They will proceed to moisturize and everything. You know, foot up, old school, sort of everything in my face. I'm like, okay, cool, right, lads, yeah, cool, good to see you. How are you? Good here? Yeah, great, yeah, good, good. And this happens, you know, 3 or 4 times a day, you know, through lunch, through the evening. But what's amazing is when they go to work, they're meant to put a shirt and tie on. And so they come out of lunch, they've got their chamois again, sort of there, just air drying a bit. But the first thing they put on is their shirt. You know, shirt goes on, tie goes on. You know, still no pants. It's like very reluctant to put them on. You know, they had cufflinks, they'd put them on. They blow dry their hair, you know, moisturize their face. You know, then they sit down, the socks go on. I'm not even joking here, socks go on. And then they sort of walk around a bit, chat to their mates, and then they sit down. And it's like this big sigh of reluctance. Like, eventually they have to put their pants on. And you're like, oh, and now I'll go to work. But honestly, it's berserk. And for one session, I had to go in the ice bath. And Andrew Kelleway had to go in the ice bath, and he put his Speedos on, and they all started pointing and laughing at him. And they actually went over and made him take off his Speedos for the ice bath. So I was like, okay, fine. Yeah, seems normal. But yeah, that's my overriding sort of difference in the culture so far.
Wow, I don't even know where to go after that. Is this going to be a culture you're going to bring back when you return to Saracens?
Well, I don't know, really. I mean, our showers are so crap at Saracens that everyone just wants to get in there and get out as quick as possible. But in Japan, there's a big thing of having the hot bath and the sort of, there is the cold bath, but just sort of sitting there and socializing, which is quite nice, really, because when I first came into rugby, the sort of the big hot baths that, I guess, Adam, you probably started out when you were younger, you know, where everyone sits there afterwards, has a beer. I never really got them because of hygiene reasons. Not me personally, just rugby in general. didn't stop just because of me. But it's quite nice to be just sitting there and just chat to your mates a bit and try and speak some Japanese.
Are you going to find out why the nakedness? Are you going to ask?
I think it's just a cultural thing, because I went to an onsen, which is like their sort of spa, I guess. And, you know, everyone is completely naked. You know, it's, at one point it felt a bit weird because there was little kids running around. And I was like, I'm not sure this is play on, really. I don't know, really. I felt a bit prim and proper. I was like, oh, God. One, you know, I've manscaped, which made me look like a weirdo because apparently that's illegal. You know, secondly, you know, there's just little kids running around and you're just trying to relax in the onsen and kids like jumping on your toes. And I'm like, what's happening here? And what really capped it off for me was we're in the onsen and, you know, obviously someone has to go and test the water, you know, chlorine levels, like temperature, check the sauna, which is fantastic. We got to watch sumo wrestling in the sauna in the onsen, which was, you know, a good education. But this person has to go around and check the temperature of the water and everything. And you'd think they'd be able to find a man to do this job in a very naked, male-only onsen. And yet this poor woman, or lucky woman, whichever way you look at it, she's either, you know, done well or bad, is just walking around, you know, trying to look everywhere, trying to test the water and walk around and test it again, just keep the thermometer in. And I'm thinking, this is berserk. What's happening? But, you know, perhaps it's just a very traditional thing.
What's the crack with the language barrier over there? Because even when I come into London Irish, for instance, and still now, if I'm talking in a meeting or I'm getting a bit excited, lads are looking around going, what the f*** is this lad saying? Because it might come out a bit quick, or, you know, in my Irish accent. So I'm sure you have the similar situation over there with the language barrier.
Yeah, but I would like to know what gets you excited in rugby terms. You know, is it jackals? Is it, you know, mauling? You know,
I could be getting a bit very animated sometimes in meetings. So I kind of have to hold myself back a little bit and stop myself getting too worked up, if you get me. So
I can't imagine that.
And this is someone who's just narrated his own book. So let's just keep that in mind. You've just narrated
very, very,
your own
very
audiobook.
Calmly. Very right, calmly, okay. Mind you.
Yeah. Well, you have.
Have you?
Yeah, yeah. Just brought out a book as well. Yeah. I'll send you a copy, actually.
Are you not allowed to do a quick plug, or is it against the rules?
No, I am, yeah. Fuel, yeah. Fuel is the name of the book. Out now on Audible as well.
To put you to sleep. Is it just the life and times of your career, or, you know, is it?
Yeah, basically brings you through my.
I have read the book. It's very good.
Did you leave a review, Lee?
I didn't leave a review. I'm leaving it right now.
Yes.
But I didn't listen to the audiobook. I just decided that I would sort of like do it in my own comedy Sean voice in my head as I was taking the words in.
That's entertainment value.
Why is it called Fuel?
It's basically brought, it goes through my whole life as a child as well, and growing up on a farm, and what kind of fueled me to get to where I got to. Because I came from a club background at home. I didn't go to a rugby school, and it's very unusual for that to happen. So it's a bit of a different pathway in Ireland, coming through a club system than a school system. So it's just, yeah, really what fueled me throughout my whole career to keep me going.
You've said that answer before, haven't you?
I haven't.
Okay. It was very well.
But sorry, I've deflected it. The communication with the teammates can be quite hard at times, especially when you're trying to get some detail across, or what I want as a fly half. You know, I want them to be flat for a cross field, or looking for a chip, or running certain lines. So what invariably happens is when there's a break, I just scream the translator's name, Tack, and he comes running over, and I try and get my point across as quick as possible, generally. But it's a lot like, they do understand rugby framework and rugby words, I should say, but it's just knowing what those are in this new team. So if you want to run a dummy switch pop or something, what their terminology is, or if you want to run a blocker play or anything like that, it's just so they... Then I put it into the words they understand in terms of the rugby talk. And once you get that, they're golden. And I tell you, they are the most resilient group. I told you about how far we run and how hard we train. They just crack on, no complaints, do exactly what they're told to do at 100 miles an hour. So a 35-year-old guy is out there, minute one of the day, and he's doing sprints relentlessly. And I'm just trying to warm my hamstrings up. I do that, I won't last a week. And yet they do it the whole day. They run into a brick wall. There's no hard hold or shoulders on. It's either full contact or touch. And full contact is pretty much the whole time. So, you find me in the backfield a lot. And I survive. Yeah.
Alex, it's great that you're going to be doing this with us over the next few weeks. I'm slightly worried about the alarm calls that you're going to have. But you're up for that?
Yeah, no, it's all good. I'm an early riser anyways, so it's not a problem really.
All right, well, just before we go, we must just send our condolences after the shock today that Christophe Dominici suddenly passed away at the age of 48. He is the absolute epitome of French flair. I'm sure you, Adam, you must have played against him before. I think what everybody remembers is that 99 World Cup and some of the tries he scored. He was a real star, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a class player. I think, I'm pretty sure I did play against him, never got near him or never wanted to, he would have skinned me. He was very similar to a Shane Williams sort of guy with his feet, and that semi-final against in the World Cup was, again, I wouldn't say that was the highlight for him, but, a lot of highlights, but that was probably best remembered for, and what a player, and very, very sad.
Yeah, absolutely. That is all we've got time for. Alex, thanks very much for joining us, because I think a few people that might have joined in for this relaunch, having what had gone before, was thinking that there was an awful lot of Celts on this program. So you've brought the balance back a little bit. We are going to change it up every week. Thank you so much for listening to House of Rugby. Do not forget, you can continue to get involved on the Facebook page, Twitter, and all the usual places. And before we go, I can point you in the direction of a new football podcast that has just been launched. It's called All to Play For and features Tom Davis and Joe Cole. But Adam, Sean, Alex, thanks so much for your company, and we'll see you all again next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the House of Rugby, Season 3 on Joe.